This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to Province Sports Radio, Friday with Ed Willis edition. I'm Paul Chapman, joined by Ed Willis. How's things for you today, Ed?
Well, great, and I'm very excited about it. I didn't know we'd expanded the budget, and we now have cough buttons here. So
it's, yeah, we do.
This is a big day in our podcast.
Yeah,
world.
Installed for our resident smoker, Howard Samara. Yeah, but you know,
you have to give it up for somebody who's still smoking in this day and age.
Especially when they're around high school athletes every day. It's fantastic. Imagine the stories you get out in the smoke pit behind the school.
The commitment.
Absolutely. Well, if you do feel any, just press the button. So
I might just randomly, just because it's there in front of me, just saying push me. Yeah.
By way of a teaser, I will let people know that we are going to talk about the Caps and Lions first, but we are also get to the Canucks later, and also just a little NFL and some affiliates later on. So if you're curious what we're going to talk about and want to stick around, this is it. We're going to start with the Whitecaps, Ed. This is, of course, the winner-take-all game on Sunday evening, which is odd. I still don't understand why they play on Sundays rather than Saturdays. Well, I do, but basically ESPN broadcasts college football, but there you go. It's going to be a great occasion. I think there'll be a lot of Portland fans up here. The place is sold out. They've taken the tarps. Be the biggest crowd the Whitecaps have had since they've come back to MLS. But more importantly, this is on them. They're at home. They have to score one goal and stop Portland from scoring to go through. And if they do, they're in the conference finals and will be playing either team that they will be playing. They have beaten this season. So it's all there for the Whitecaps to win. How big a weekend is this for them?
Well, yeah, it is. And you're right. If this plays out the way it would, this could really be, maybe a tipping point. But I'm not sure. I don't think this franchise is at the point where they have to win to really engage their fan base and to solidify it and use this as a launching point into a bright new future. I think that's the case anyways. It's pretty solid group. The one thing about the Whitecaps, and I think we've talked about this before, when you're at the game, you're never sure if the 21,000 people there represent everyone who's interested in that game. And I think it's a larger problem with MLS. There is this incredibly loyal, devoted core group which follows teams. But do they get a larger audience? And again, we referenced it in another show, and I remember talking about, there was a group of reporters, and we asked each other, who won the MLS Cup last year? And more importantly, who was in the final? And we all guessed LA Galaxy because that's kind of the logical guess, but couldn't tell you anything. Point being, when the local team drops out, everybody's interest drops out. And I think that's really what has to change in MLS.
Absolutely. I think there is a level of, are you a fan of the team or the sport that you touched on? And when the Canucks are out, there's no doubt interest drops, but people are still aware of which teams are in, and there will be favorite players. And mm-hmm. I think that this is the interesting dilemma for the Whitecaps, though, Ed. We've seen the Galaxy go out and bring in top name players, and in some cases it's worked. This year it didn't. But for the Whitecaps, as engaging as their team is, and as well as they've beat that team and they acknowledge they are not going to be able to get an Andrea Pirlo or Steven Gerrard to come and play in Vancouver, they're just not. But at the same time, you need star power, you need personalities. And I love this Whitecaps team, but if you're a kid and you're going to identify with a star player, who would it be?
Yeah.
That's an issue for them, isn't it?
No, totally it is. And you look, who their most valuable player this year was Kendall Watson, who's a great defender, but he doesn't really move the needle as far as a Q factor, as far as excitement, as far as star power. And then the other, the runner-up was David Oestead, who's the goalie. And I'm sorry, the soccer goalie, it doesn't quite get it done.
Not
either.
Moving a lot of the fuchsia jerseys is
no.
what you're saying?
No, exactly. So, no, and you're right. I think that's the next step, is they have to develop one or two stars.
Well, and
that people identify with. Maybe it was going to be Morales. He had an off year. He was injured. Bad luck for them. But they've also, we've been waiting for Kakuta Manning.
That's it. That's what I was going
to
say.
To make the next step forward. I mean, Darren Maddox, I think this is his fourth year with the team.
Yeah.
And it just hasn't happened for him. So I think that's really the next big step for the Whitecaps.
Yeah. How many people do you see wearing Dan Hamhuis jerseys, right? you know, people like goal scorers. They like the flashy players, and they've certainly got guys there who they were hoping to take the next step. I think Camilo, had he stuck around, not only would it be a great fit with where this team is right now, but he'd be one of those linchpin players. But maybe that's coming for the Whitecaps. I don't know. I look at this and results do intrigue people. And I hear the critics of MLS always harp on the TV numbers. Now, I think the TV numbers, when you isolate them in the big cities, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, are good. Outside of that, no, they don't resonate at all. I don't think people in Kamloops or Kelowna or Prince George would watch this game the way the Lions would get watched if they were in the Western Conference Final. But they're still a fairly new team in a new era for the sport. We can harken back to 79 all we want. There's a huge disconnect there. But there's no doubt success does breed, you know, fans. It really does. And if they get to the conference final and if they get to play a Seattle and they open up the top deck and you get 50,000. And look, I believe we tried to figure this out yesterday. Unless it's New York in the East, the Caps could host the championship final at BC Place. That would turn a lot of people onto this team.
Yeah, it was. What do you think of the organization?
Well, you know what? They took a bit of a rubbishing 3 years ago after Martin Rennie left and people were making fun of the council. You know, people, the local soccer community can be quite snide. And so they're all sort of taking shots at, well, who is it that's making the call on these players? Since that time, Ed, they haven't set a foot wrong. I think Robinson's been a big success. I think the players they've found, say, going away from the Scottish mafia and instead tending to a Uruguayan mafia, they play good soccer. The atmosphere in there is good. I disagree with their stubbornness in terms of opening up seats, but they want people to buy season tickets. I think they've been slow and steady and they've stuck to their guns. And here they are with a chance to go into the conference final. You know, Toronto FC would kill for this and they've been around for 11 years. So, you know, I have to give them credit. I really do.
Yeah, no, I give them a solid B as an organization, in developing, depth, in developing a team that plays a pleasing style, in developing their own players. And using this model instead of the going out. But this is kind of an interesting one for me because, you know, from where I sit, MLS is trending towards a little more of a star-driven league, a big-name league. And I can remember specific games here where great individual players just flat out beat, the Whitecaps by themselves. Giovinco early in the year, the New York guys who came in, in that very memorable game late in the season. So again, it comes back to this idea of who is going to be the star, who's going to be the real difference maker for this team. But everything else is set up for them. And like I said, think they've done most things well, but this really would put an exclamation point on the plan going forward.
The dilemma for the MLS is and always will be, unless you can develop great North American players, is Giovinco is almost too good for MLS. And there is no way around it. As we saw with Defoe, who actually wasn't very good here, but an English team comes calling and he wants to go home. If a Juventus or a Milan come in for Giovinco, he's going to want to go back to Italy. And the flip side is Perlow. Yes, he ran that game against the Whitecaps here, but there's a famous clip going around of him standing on the post on the corner and he's literally leaning against the post and a header goes in right over his head and he just watches it. And it's like, as the older star, how much are you really vested in this anyway? I know Gerard came out this week and said he wasn't prepared for the travel, the artificial turf, or the temperature.
Wow.
Google, maybe?
It was a surprise.
You know where LA is, right? Like, you know, I know it's not Bolton, okay? That's but right. It's a palindrome of not lob for those Monty Python fans. But, you know, that's the kind of dilemma that MLS teams have, where I do love what the Whitecaps have done in terms of developing their own players. And you create that identity. For all the success Giovinco had, if he's gone in 2 years because he doesn't want to play in North America anymore, then that sets TFC back.
Yeah, did Gerard think it was like an hour and a half bus ride to Kansas City?
I think so.
Orlando. How far can Orlando be? What do you mean it's a...
You would have the LA and Columbus Derby, you know? Traveling fans. Do I need to get tickets for the away section there? Not quite the same as it is when Liverpool are playing Leeds or you know, any of the Manchester teams.
You know, like, further to the point about, you know, MLS maybe, you know, losing these guys, and if, you know, somebody comes calling for Giovinco, you know, I think that's the reality of the world. And I don't ever see that changing. And I say, you know, good for them to get, you know, a player of that caliber who's in his prime, who can attract the attention of the top clubs in the world. I think that's a significant development for this league. But I also think he's an outlier. I don't think you're going to see that often. And if you do, I just hope it's a North American player, because I think what a great advertisement that would be.
Well, absolutely. But that is... If you learn lessons for it's and the parallels are quite funny when you learn from the Whitecaps 1979 team that did win the NASL championship, while a lot of other organizations were going for the Pelés and the Beckenbauers, the George Best, Johan Cruyffs, who were on their last days, that Whitecaps team won. I mean, yes, they had some older English veterans, but if you really look at their success, they had guys like Bruce Grobelaar and Peter Beardsley who mm-hmm. went on to play yes. at the top level in England.
And for quite a while.
Yeah, too. Absolutely.
They were very good players in the Premier.
So you had the young guys who kind of cut their teeth here and got people excited and really were invested in building their career and going over to Europe rather than vice versa. And I think, again, that's you're going to have to take each case as it is. And you can't quibble with what TFC did because they made the playoffs for the first time, even though the Blue Jays kind of rubbed that into the ground and it was over before they thought of it. So,
yeah, you know, so I was in Toronto for the Lions game last week, and the Argos workout at Downsview, which, as I turned out, you actually have to change your watch because it's in a different time zone. But that's also where TFC works out. And so you know, I made the trek out there, and it's this big facility. It's an old army base, and it is weird. It's eerie because the buildings are all from the 30s and 40s, and they've kind of retrofitted them to so the teams can work out there. This is going to be a long way to go for not much of a payout, but anyways. I'm finally thinking the Argos finally have the Toronto playing field to themselves, right? The Blue Jays are done. That's it. And of course, that's the day Anthopoulos announces he's not coming back. So long story short, there were as many Vancouver reporters covering the Argos practice as there were Toronto reporters. The Star and the Sun was there, and that was it. And I don't count Dan Ralph because he's Canadian press, but that was it. Five writers, no TV cameras. No radio mics, just the five print guys.
Look,
there.
And I'll say this as well, because it's funny you say that practice was a long way to go for not much payoff to get there, literally. But I was in the gym here on that day, knowing that TFC and Montreal were playing later that day. The Canucks were playing that night. I think Winnipeg were playing that night. The first 25 minutes of SportsCenter was on Anthopoulos. I get it's your lead story. But almost half of your national hour-long broadcast at 3 o'clock was just based on the Blue Jays. It's Toronto's a black hole for that kind of stuff. Have you heard this developing story though? That if the Whitecaps and Impact are the teams that make it to the final, Don Garber gets to invoke a secret clause that's going to put the Red Bulls and Galaxy in the final instead. I think it's one of these complicated allocation money spin-off side deals that we have. You know, Arthur Griffiths was the one who signed that, funnily enough.
Yeah, well, no, we jest, of course, but you know, and that's another thing MLS has to get past. We need the big markets, and if we don't get the big markets, well, you know, and I'm sorry, and the obvious comparison, but look at the NFL, there is no connection between the size of the market and the level of interest, because if Green Bay's in, that's a huge national story, and maybe MLB is just slightly different, but not totally.
No,
because I think Kansas City became a huge national absolutely. Story in the States.
And I've made this point many times, you know, the Colts against the Saints was Drew Brees against Peyton Manning, two of the biggest stars in the game. The NHL suffers from this a little bit. You ended up with, you know, LA and New York in the final a couple of years ago, and everyone thought, oh my God, this is the dream final. It didn't move the needle really for those ratings. It's just, it's about build your athletes. Go back to the point of the Whitecaps centrally, you know, as a kid, whose jersey do you want to own? You have to have that nice mix of success with star power as well. You'd also mentioned, Ed, that you wanted to look at the Lions this weekend. Just as a segue, I do find it interesting some of the back channel stuff we hear in the media. I don't want to say these organizations don't like each other, but there is some sniping that goes on, and it's clear that they feel that they are in competition with each other as much as they are the other teams in their league.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and it exists. That isn't manufactured, and I wonder why. And the dynamic is obvious, is easily enough to identify. The Lions have been the second ticket in this town forever, and there's been years where they were the first. There were years they were more popular than the Canucks in the mid '80s, and they don't take. But I don't think they have anybody to blame but themselves. They have just been slow to react to a changing market. They've done the things they've always done. They've just let the product sell itself with a minimum amount of effort, very little creativity at the top of that organization. So they've gotten what they deserve, but they're not taking it really well either. And I think the Whitecaps probably, maybe a little less so, but they can probably be guilty of rubbing their noses in it a bit. Whitecaps are just a little more attractive. They're younger, they're sexier right now, and it's incumbent on the Lions to try and get a toehold in that market. And I just like to see some effort. High school football is really big in the Lower Mainland and in this province. That's an obvious place to attack for me. Somebody sent me an email and I thought it was such a great point. He said, I go to the Lions game. I can't find an Asian face anywhere. And that's, South or East Asian. And I thought, well, yeah, no. And there's another one. There's,
And despite their TV campaign that's currently on, you don't see a lot of women there either.
Well, no. Yeah. And that's just it. So, it's changing for the Lions. I think Jonathan Jennings changes so many things for this franchise. Now the question is, can they capitalize on this? And I'm not sure if they have to make a run this playoff season, but I think they have to demonstrate that this is real. They have the nucleus of a potential championship team going forward.
Well, it's interesting. I know you wrote this piece last year. I think some of it is on the Lions, but some of it is on the CFL. There's a definite lack of star power in the CFL now, even compared to 5 years ago. You look at how big a name G. Roy Simon was across the league, not just locally. And I can't tell you, but you would go back to names like Calvillo and even, prior to that, of course, we had Jeff Garcia and Flutie. You want to go way back. The league just doesn't have that kind of star power now. But just as you were talking, something struck me. Of course, you and I go back when you kind of first came to this organization. It was around the time of the infamous Mr. X, who was stepping in to save the Lions, and that was David Braley. And honestly, he really did save the CFL with the money that he put into the team. But over the while that the Lions had their up and down struggles, and then Braley finally got it right when Bobby Ackles came in and Wally Buono came over. Now, Wally had his success, and then a lot of people were, you can't do two jobs. It's impossible to do two jobs. And he was almost pushed out of the coaching role. Well, honestly, as I look back now, since Wally is, whether it's Wally the coach was that much better than Wally the GM, that's where things started to go wrong. And it seems like, yes, now maybe they have something. This hasn't been the greatest year with Tedford, but they do have their quarterback. But maybe Wally should have stayed on the sidelines. I don't know.
There is a disconnect in that organization. I'm going to write about it at some point, but it's like a Mr. Potato Head doll. The head really doesn't match the body, doesn't really match the arms and the legs. And it's, you look at the successful franchises, there is no equivocation about who's in charge, about the flow, about the chain of command. In Calgary, it starts with Hufnagel. In Edmonton, it starts with Chris Jones. And that's what the Lions have to get to. Now, a little awkward year, obviously, with, Tedford coming in. But, I mean, they've got to work out the relationship there, and there needs to be some, a little more consistent direction from the very top of the organization in terms of connecting with the fan base too. So, maybe you give them this year for everything to settle, but that's what I would want to see out of the Lions heading into the 2016 season. I mean, Tedford's record speaks for himself. I think he will figure it out in time. I think he's relied a little too much on George Cortez this year and to the detriment of the offense. But since Jennings has come in, that's changed everything there. So, interesting year this year. I almost give them a bit of a pass this year. And having said that, they could make the Grey Cup and it wouldn't surprise me one bit. Okay, it would surprise me a bit, but it wouldn't shock me, because that's the nature of the CFL.
Well, absolutely. And again, we've seen eras where you would have dominant teams, and the Lions were one of those for a while that pencil them into the Western Conference final. In the late 2000s there. I look at Edmonton and Calgary, and a couple of years ago, Calgary looked like they were going to be this team, and they're not necessarily. They could win the Grey Cup this year, but they're not a sure thing. it is, as we put everything in this podcast in the frame of where do you fit in this landscape, it would be very interesting to see the Whitecaps in the MLS Cup final, the Lions in the Grey Cup while the Canucks are going. This isn't as black and white as Toronto, where if the Leafs are playing, they just, or even the Jays, and they just absolutely suck everything up. I do think there's room for all three, but it would be very interesting at this time of year to see where people's loyalty would go. Look, there's room to follow all three, but just in terms of how much interest there would be.
Well, you think about the last 3 weeks in this, Mark, and it really has been like a mini golden age of Vancouver sports. I mean, the Lions look dead and buried. They've made a runner in the playoffs. Whitecaps hosting their first ever MLS playoff game, and I don't think a lot of people saw the start the Canucks would get off to this year. So, you know, some good things happening with the teams, and then we're going to segue into the next one. It just, in the Canucks case, I haven't seen it translated into fans in the seats, and that's a real puzzler for me.
Yeah, Jonathan McDonald, noted cheapskate sports editor, he always has all these rules around sporting events, and one of his rules is he will not go to early season hockey games because he just doesn't think the hockey's very good. But he told me that he was going to break his rule and go to Pittsburgh because he wanted to see Sidney Crosby, and he went on StubHub, and I think he got tickets for like $65, yes, which for what is supposed to be a marquee game is shocking, to be honest with you. And I know Crosby's off to a bad start, and I know Crosby's been here a few times after missing sort of through the start of his career, missing every appearance here. But it is a little strange that as on board as people are with the Canucks, that they're not putting the money out. Now, is that a market-driven thing, Ed? Is it cost? Is it the fact people are still wait and see with this team? Or do we go back to this argument that it's just easier to sit at home and watch them in HD?
Well, I think it's all those things, you know, and I think the previous regime spent an awful lot of goodwill in this marketplace, and it's been slow to come back. I mean, they went out and hired, you know, like Trevor Linden is the Justin Trudeau of this market. He's the guy who makes everybody feel good about the product and feel good.
Does he want to legalize pot too?
And not touching that one. But, you know, I think he's changed the perception of the franchise, but it just hasn't, you know, it just hasn't been reflected in fan support. And I find that so puzzling, especially this year, because everybody said, look, you know, don't give us the same old retreads. We want to see that, you know, if you're going to lose, make sure you lose with the McCanns and the Vertanens and the Huttons. Well, they've done that. Not only have they done it, they've been pretty successful at it, but it still hasn't really caught a fire yet. So, it is an interesting one for me, a real interesting one. And I go back to that, but all those other things you mentioned, the cost of tickets, you know, the omnipresence of the product on TV, that has to play a role in this.
Yeah, and also the lack of atmosphere. I know the Whitecaps will tout their atmosphere, but, you know, there are sometimes whether if you go to a concert, let's say, and it's a band that as we get older, we're not as big into going to a concert, staying out late that we used to. But I always find when I do go to a concert, and I've kind of dreaded at first, I get there, really enjoy it. There's something about being at a live event you can't replicate anywhere else. And I say the same thing for a sporting event. If you're at a sporting event and you're in the arena and the atmosphere, the catharsis between the fans, it can really create something. Yet this is something that people will criticize Rogers Arena for over and over again. And I don't think that it's fair to just say, oh, it's a crappy crowd or it's too corporate or everything else. They're trying to sell something to you at every break. It's all geared for TV anyway. It would be great to leave a hockey game and say, man, that was fun. I can't wait to do it again. That was worth my $150. And I think that's the balance. It's not just that it's $150. You leave there and kind of go, meh.
Yeah. And you know, you add that to the laundry list too. I think there is a backlash about people being treated like they're these, you know, ciphers that are placed in the stands to, you know, be bombarded, you know, with the corporate message and the advertisement. And that place is so loud in there. We're up high, right? So we're at the same level. We're at the same level of the speakers. Your head feels like it's in Jimi Hendrix. He was a guitar player for you kids out there back in the 60s. In Jimi Hendrix Marshall amp. you don't really have time to think or reflect or react to the play.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a group of trained SEALs, and I realize I'm mixing my metaphors here in world speed, at a world speed rate. But no, there's just no, opportunity for things to develop organically and for the fans to react and enjoy what's going on the ice because they're being told.
Yeah.
You know, what to enjoy every time there's a stoppage in play. So, you know, again, you know, they toss those terms around like fan experience and in-game experience. And I don't think they really know what that means.
No, I think it just means revenue. Jake Virtanen has a big shift. Let's say he comes out, lays a couple of huge body checks, gets a loose puck, throws it out front. Horvat has a great chance, and all of a sudden the crowd's on their feet. Now we go to a TV timeout, mm-hmm. and here's some Tim Horton sponsored game. I find this soccer snobbery that says the Whitecaps is this. It's not because soccer fans are better than hockey fans. It's just the nature of the way the business is.
Well, and you think of the way the games flow in soccer versus the way they flow in hockey, and I think there really is something to that.
Yeah.
It allows soccer allows the fans to engage naturally and kind of at their own rate and their own level. And if you want to be one of the nuts dancing, you do that. If you want to sit and watch, you do that. But collectively, there is a real sense that the fans do enjoy the game. I just haven't been. And then they've laid some stinkers this year, but they've been few and far between for the most part. And even the games they've lost, my sense has been the fans really enjoyed the experience.
I wonder if, you know, 2011 kind of satiated people a little. I don't want to say too much because obviously they didn't win, but for the longest time, there was this desire for the Canucks to be an elite team for decades. Mm-hmm. And even when they would have a playoff run, it was somewhat surprising. There was an expectation with this team in that era around 2011 that, you know, yeah, the playoffs were a given. It was just, how far are we going to go? And I wonder if people are just a little bit cynical about the overall chances of this team, and that's why they're not fully bought in and invested yet to the point where they're going to put their money down.
Yeah, I think what happened to that team so quickly was such a colossal disappointment because it looked like they were poised for a 4, 5, 6 year run, and it was over by the end of the 2011-2012 season. Then you've got the lockout the next year, you've got another first round ouster, and then we know what happened after that. But, you know, I think that was just such a crashing disappointment for hockey fans to finally have this team that looked like it was going to be worthy of their unconditional support for a period of 5, 6 years. And then it didn't happen. And they kind of had, you know, the Charlie Brown and Lucy in the football. They've kind of had the rug pulled out for them a couple of times. Like the Crawford team looked like it was going to be that team for a while, too. Same thing. Right into the dumper. You know, the team in the early 90s looked like it was poised for a sustained run. Same thing in the dumper. And it's usually because something weird happened with ownership or the front office.
Strike or something like that. Yeah.
Something crazy. But yeah, it's just that cycle with the Canucks, I think it's hurt the team in this market.
Well, I think one of the oddest things about this team in its franchise history is that it's got a perfect record in conference finals. And that's to say that they've only been to three.
Yeah, I know.
They don't go on deep playoff runs. It's like we know about the times they've made the final and didn't win, but you know, when those expectations have been there and they've had a good team, it's not like you get close one year and learn and then get, it's this team is either, you know, when they have gone, they've been great, but they're never in that conversation even to get to a conference final and maybe put in a good showing. It's like one round and out, you know, if you get to the second round, you're not really a contender anyway. So, it's been a weird start to the season, Ed. It's funny. I heard Ray Ferraro 3 years ago throw out this term that, you know, we all talk about it and where you are at U.S. Thanksgiving is pretty much the way the league's gonna. I've seen that quoted like 6 times this week that everyone is now taking this down as gospel. Does this mean Anaheim's out? What about Calgary? Are they like completely dead out of it now too? It's a weird situation in the West. There's no doubt the Canucks, in my mind, are not a serious contender, but the West is nowhere near where I thought it would be apart from, well, even Chicago. I thought the Kane thing would, and the guys they lost in free agency would impact them way more than it has. Chicago at times has looked like, no, by the time we get to the playoffs, they're going to be back. LA looked like a disaster their first 2 weeks. Then they rip off 7 in a row, but the Western Conference to me is still. Largely a puzzle.
No. And, you know, that Central Division is just so incredible. I mean, I believe Chicago's in last place.
Yeah.
in the division, which is absolutely insane. But, you know, further to the Canucks, and, you know, I don't know if Anaheim is dead and buried, but I think we can agree it's a long way. But that, if they're out of the picture, that changes a lot of things for the Canucks. All they have to do is finish in the top three in their division, and that's eminently doable. Edmonton is done.
Yeah.
Calgary looks like they're done this year. Whatever magic they had last year, they just haven't been able to carry forward to this year. So, I mean, all of a sudden it's, you know, the Canucks, they're a funny team. Like, I thought they were horrible against Pittsburgh. Absolutely horrible. They still had a chance to tie that in the last minute.
Yeah.
They are rarely blown out of games. And then, and Willie DeJardin, he takes a lot of heat, and rightfully so in a lot of cases, but that team plays hard most nights. And they are rarely out of games. And yeah, I think that's his strength as a head coach.
But the funny thing about that is they rarely blow teams out either, because they'll get these 2 and 3 goals leads, and all of a sudden it's a close game again. So,
you know, I'm sorry, I've got to say, so Tony showed up for the, Tony Gallagher showed, long dear colleague Tony Gallagher showed up for the Pittsburgh game, and it was an awful game, and I finally turned to, after listening to him rant and roar about Pittsburgh and how they were junking up and how Mike Johnson had taken this team of thoroughbreds and turned them into plow horses, and I said, you know, the only way this game could be more entertaining is if they gave you a mic and let you talk to the fans as the game was going on, because it was just classic Gallagher.
Fantastic.
It was too good.
Now, I know for the last topic we wanted to talk about, you wanted to highlight the Bengals, of course, that are a team that I've followed since the early 80s, but more so in terms of how people latch onto the teams they do.
Well, no, it's one of my favorite topics. And, you know, and it's funny, I have had teams, if I was a New York Football Giants a fan starting by the time they got Fran Tarkenton. And so back when I was a kid, and I followed, and they were absolutely awful. And then they drafted Lawrence Taylor, and they were really good, and somehow they weren't as interesting to me. So I've maintained my allegiance to the Red Sox, and all the other ones have kind of fallen away for a variety of reasons. But this is why, and I know you're a Bengals fan, and I know you have suffered through some excruciating seasons, but my question to you is why do we do it? Why do we form these affiliations? Like, we'll burn through, you know, I'm using the royal we. We'll burn through 2 or 3 different marriages, but we'll stay loyal to a sports franchise.
Well, it's kind of funny, especially when you look at some of those other sports, because, you know, it really is about that emotional connection. And, you know, there is a natural predilection to your geographical team. You will follow the Canucks if you're born here. Although there are still some family ties where, you know, pre-1970, and there were no major league teams in this market, your dad maybe followed the Wings or the Habs or whoever, and you have a family connection that way. But most people will follow the Canucks. The other major American sports that we follow tend to be, you know, where did you get that connection? Was it on TV? Mm-hmm. And as you said, often it's to the players as much as it is to the city or what drew you to that team. I've long since told the story that when I was a kid, it tended to be most kids who followed the NFL were either Seahawks because they were local and they were on TV, or in the AFC, we got Steelers on TV every week, or perhaps a few Raiders, or the Cowboys. And I like the Cowboys. In 82, Cowboys lost to the 49ers up and coming with Joe Montana, the catch. I was cheering so hard against the 49ers in that Super Bowl, and they happened to be playing the Bengals, that I started to like the Bengals team a little bit more. I liked Sam Weish. I liked, you know, at that time it was Ken Anderson, Chris Collinsworth. Mm-hmm. They had the different uniforms, and I was like, hey, I kind of like this team. And they were decent then. They made the Super Bowl in 88, and then they absolutely fell off a cliff. And you stay with that team, and I've had a number of people say, like, just pick another team. Like, why do you like the Bengals? You have no connection to Cincinnati. But you keep it, and you do, especially when you're a kid.
Yeah.
And this is the argument that pissed me off so much about Sportsnet telling us over and over again how the hearts of a nation been captured by those godforsaken Blue Jays. Number one, some of us are Expos fans, but some of us are Mariners fans and Red Sox fans and Yankees fans. And to me, the hardcore baseball fans in this market had another team to cheer for. Just like with the Raptors, we're told we have to cheer for the Raptors. You know what? There's a shitload of people in this market who love Steve Nash, and they've always followed the Suns because of that. And I just find that people make those connections and keep them for whatever reason. You can't force it on people. But that's the great thing. I remember when the Bengals were only ever on TV once a year.
Yeah.
And it would be a Monday night game where they'd get absolutely steamrolled by the Steelers or someone like that. hey, they're on national TV 3 weeks in a row now. The irony is I can't watch any of them because I always have a 12-year-old soccer practice I have to run. But it is, it's, I used to subscribe to the Bengals Weekly before the internet where they would send me this little newspaper every week that was just horrible. But that's where you get the story on the prospect who was 2 years from now was actually going to be a decent player.
Yeah. Well, I actually had some time to think during that very long, long
answer. Yeah, you get me going on this one. Yeah.
You get, well, no, and I think there's a couple of things that pop up for me. You know, one is, you know, as everything changes around our life, I think there's something comforting in having that one thing that doesn't change. And I know it's, you know, it's a sports franchise. I'm not going to make it out any more important, but it's still, it's a touchstone. It's an anchor. It's something that ties us to a different time. And, you know, and I think there's a lot of that involved in it. I think there's, you know, loyalty issues. I think that I think stubbornness comes into it. I know for the Red Sox, it was just like, look, I don't care how badly you screw up. You're not going to drive me away. And believe me, I sat through some just nightmare situations with that team. And when they finally did win it.
That's it.
When
right?
they finally did win it in 2004, it was just such a magical, and you know, and I'm not going to tell you, it was anticlimactic. Oh, I thought it would be better. It was just so fantastic the way they did it, coming back from 3-0 to the Yankees. And it just sort of, and I've gotten a great deal of enjoyment out of their two World Series victories since too.
And you do, that is the payoff, isn't it? And, and I will say that the Seahawks fan, who suffered so much through the Dan McGuire, Rick Meyer, Tim Rosenbach years, was more than, I know he was the Cardinals first. To them, the Super Bowl victory means so much more than someone who was cheering for the Packers 4 years ago.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's I think it's an intensely personal thing too. You know, and you're rewarded for the investment you've made over the years. I'm not sure if it's, you know, you feel part of this community. I don't think it's that so much as the, you know, that thing you were talking about. So, I mean, I'm just trying to think. So, like, yeah, I mean, the Cubs tease this year. I can't.
They are odds on to win the World Series next year. They have the best odds.
Yeah, I have to believe this is the team that's going to break the curse. There's just too much talent in that lineup.
What a story that would be
For that not to happen. So that's kind of the next one I'm looking forward to. Although I have a rooting in. I've always liked the Bengals myself. Like going back to when they were an expansion team in the early Kenny Anderson years, because they were exciting. They had that like high powered offense with Isaac Curtis and Essex Johnson and Bye Bye Brooks and all those guys.
Yeah. You know what's going to happen, don't you? Even if they go undefeated at 16-0, the Patriots will do it. We'll have the tiebreaker and they'll lose the AFC champion. You could have, this is the curse of the Bengals, that you could have the best season you could possibly have and still not win the Super Bowl. That's what it will be.
Yeah, run into it. Yeah, the Red Sox were famous for that. When they finally did have their good years, they'd run into these teams that won like 115 games, like the 86 Mets or, you know, the Yankees when they were so powerful in the 70s. So, well, it's going to be fun to watch.
Well, just one last thing on this while we're examining it. This is the get off my lawn portion. These kids today, I have a 12-year-old nephew who is a football nut, but byproduct of running his dad's fantasy football team and playing Madden on those darn video games where he would take his favorite team and trade every star player from the league to his team. It's almost like he doesn't have a favorite team. He just migrates to players. So he was a Patriots fan. Then became a Broncos fan when Peyton Manning went there. And in the Seahawks Super Bowl win, apparently, I got a huge kick out of this because he's a funny kid. Yeah, he's at the time he was 12. When the Seahawks were up, I can't even remember what it was, like 31-0 at halftime, he took off his Peyton Manning jersey, which he had only had for a year because he was a Brady fan the year before, threw it into the fireplace and said he was disgusted and became a Seahawks fan. At halftime of the Super Bowl, he changed allegiance, and now he is a Seahawks fan still. So I'm just wondering if he becomes a Bengals fan this year. So he did tell me that would never happen as long as I have a ginger at quarterback, but that's a different story.
Well, it's an interesting point, though, and I've never gotten into NFL fantasy, just for the most part, because I don't understand it, and I haven't taken the time to try to understand it. Belong to a rotisserie league in baseball, but that didn't really, you know, shift my allegiance. It just gave me an opportunity to buy a lot of Red Sox.
I think it's
much to the delight of everybody else in the league, but I just wonder about that.
Well, I think it's the week-to-week nature of your matchup, and now all of a sudden you hated the Cowboys, but Tony Romo's your quarterback, and you all of a sudden become conflicted.
Starting Des Bryant this week. No, yeah, exactly.
It's odd, and same thing with video games. I remember going way back, John Van Biesbroek came to Vancouver to do the NHL games at EA, and he told me that his kids were really into video games, and that was their old hockey cards. Is that, you know, we used to learn players from their hockey cards, and this was back in the mid-90s. Now kids were learning through a video game and who was playing, what their stats were, you know, what their ratings were, who was the fastest guy in the league. It's just, these kids today don't know how we had it, right?
You know, it's funny because, like, I was a massive card collector, to the point where my mother basically threw out my university education.
Yeah.
I would be that kid today. I would be that NFL fantasy kid. I would be that. I guess nobody really collects cards anymore, not to the extent they did. But I remember the magic of, you know, opening that up and, I got Bobby Orr. I got Pete Rose. I got Hank Aaron. I got all that. It was, that's an interesting one. I never thought of it that way.
Damn, I've just got my fourth Sheldon Kanagi's.
There was always that guy. I remember the one year you couldn't open a pack of cards without getting Jesus Alou. It was.
Yeah.
or Jay Alou, because really, but at the time I really thought he was Jesus Alou, and I thought, what an unusual name for a man. But he was him, and actually you couldn't even, like, Felipe was the best of the Alou brothers, and you could never get Felipe, but you could get Maddie and Jay until the cows came.
We could go on about this route. I would love to find out what the guy who did the little cartoon sketches on the back of those cards
is now
doing.
That guy was awesome. That guy was awesome, whoever he was, absolutely.
I would love to, when a player was traded and they would paint the different colors of a new jersey on there, in particular with the Edmonton Oilers, and they'd get the colors wrong. They'd transverse the blue and the orange. It's so good. But when they announced that they were ending the run of gum in cards, I actually went out and bought a box of hockey cards that still have the gum in them. I don't even know what that is now. It's packed away somewhere at my house.
It's funny. We're laughing about this. So the very first, and it was a strike, it wasn't a lockout, but the very first NHL work stoppage, the biggest issue was about who was going to get the revenue from playing cards. Yeah. It was in 91-92. And I remember the whole thing turned when Wayne Gretzky, for one of the few times in his career, actually made a stand and said, no, like, my face belongs to me. I will sell it to who I wanted to. And that's really what ended it. And I think the whole thing lasted about 5 days. If I remember, I was with the Jets, and I remember we were stuck in San Jose and a game got canceled, and that was it. And they were playing 5 days later.
And like now that stand. Standard contract, right? You sign away your player, your image rights if you're a star player to the team, and you get compensated for it. It has changed. Anyway, Ed, anything else this week before we wrap up?
No, like I said, interesting week. We've got, you know, you got the Lions playing a meaningless game, but I think it's important that they, you know, maintain the momentum.
Who's starting quarterback in it?
The little bit of momentum. Well, I think there's only two stories in today's paper about it. We tried for a third, but we ran out of space. I think Howie really dropped the ball there. We needed Howie's take on Travis Lule. So important they maintain the momentum, and then, you know, decks are cleared for the Whitecaps on Sunday, and then the Canucks start, to me, is a very meaningful road trip. I mean, this is really, I think we're going to find out, you know, like, where the kids really learn about the slog of the NHL regular season, when you literally are playing that Tuesday night game in New Jersey and the Wednesday night game in Buffalo, and you have to suck it up, and you've got to play hard, and then you get on the plane and do it all over again the next night. So the interesting time for the franchise.
This fun fall, I love this time of year, continues, and you know, by next week we'll know what the Lions playoff scenario is, and we'll either be mourning the Whitecaps season or talking about what could be a huge conference final for them. So thanks for joining us, Ed. Enjoy the rest of your week. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.
I'm a little disappointed I didn't get to use the cough button.
Go ahead, do it now.